Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Kaveh Movahed. A large portion of our news broadcasts recently have been dedicated to economic news. It's not new exactly. There's been worry that money would stop flowing since we went into pandemic lockdowns a couple years ago. We learned a few days ago that inflation numbers show prices are up over 9% year over year. Interest rates are up too, an extra 0.75% as of yesterday. And while employment is generally pretty good, the Federal Reserve Bank actually wants a bit more unemployment right now to cool things off. Today, we're going to break down what all these numbers and statistics mean and what they might mean to you and your family. We'll check in with the state office that loans money to cities for big projects, a professional economist, and a family-based policy activist on what the state of the economy actually is, how we've been doing through the pandemic, and how to best prepare for what's ahead. We also want to hear from you, though. Share your ideas about the economy, employment, inflation, and recession, or how you're struggling or planning to get by in the future by emailing us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live. Our number is 505-277-5866. Let's start the show with our first guest this morning. On the phone from Santa Fe, we have Bradley Flitch, the Portfolio and Tax Director with the New Mexico Finance Authority. And before that, Brad was the Planning and Investment Officer for the City of Santa Fe for several years. Thanks for joining us this morning, Brad.
Good morning.
First, can you help our audience who might not be familiar with the New Mexico Finance Authority, your employer, understand what it is you all do?
The New Mexico Finance Authority, and I'm not really the best spokesman for them right now, but I've only been there 2 weeks. But its purpose was created by an act of the legislature, and it is to go into the markets, borrow money, and lend those bond proceeds to local communities, counties, cities, municipalities, healthcare agencies, water districts, and the like. That was its primary mission when it was originally created. Since then, the legislature has tapped them to help other tasks, especially during the COVID era. They took on a lot of assisting small businesses.
Okay, well, it seems like you have your hands then in and around the money that's circulating around the state, around, you know, municipalities and such. How would you describe the landscape of the New Mexico economy?
Well, you know, my experience, I've spent 6 years on the city of Santa Fe, and that's where most of my love New Mexico comes from. And it was really very robust through the pandemic. You know, certain things you would expect declined, accommodations and food service, but construction was a incredible strong spot for Santa Fe. You know, just from a national level, you know, the oil patch, you know, with oil back up to, you know, almost $100 a barrel, you would expect that there's going to be a vibrant economy there as well. You know, and then Albuquerque, you know, I really don't pay that much attention to it yet, but I will be for the next few years paying more attention to the statewide economy.
Okay. Would you suspect that Santa Fe in general is going to be in a different position than other cities around the state? Is it more in line? I guess you don't know for sure, but more in line with a big city like Albuquerque, or more similar to some of the more rural cities like Las Vegas and Farmington?
It's more of a national trend. You've seen the construction in Santa Fe, and a lot of units have been housing units are being built, and which is great. Especially here in Santa Fe, there's such a shortage of it, affordable housing. But, you know, as interest rates are coming up, and I don't see the rural economies being strong. You know, the agricultural industry has been doing well. There's a lot of demand for product. So in those areas of the state, I would expect to see a fairly strong economy as well. Some areas, there's some significant changes to the economy, especially as it pertains to energy. And New Mexico is an energy-producing state. And there's just no way around that, as it's sort of a conflict between the new energy economy, solar, winds, renewables, versus the hydrocarbons. And where the hydrocarbons was the primary source of the economy, especially like coal, you would expect that to be diminishing, natural gas to be expanding for a while, but not in perpetuity.
Okay, let's get back to kind of the more of kind of laying the groundwork for the conversation. Can you give us a general overview, kind of an idea of what's driving inflation right now?
Well, right now the energy, when you saw the prices, and again, it's really twofold. There's policy action that occurred in Washington, D.C. There's also the war in Ukraine. That's having a massive impact, especially on natural gas prices, as the U.S. is gearing up to replace Russian gas through LNG. Our prices have doubled here in the U.S., from $3 to, over $6 per thousand BTUs. So, and energy, natural gas flows through everything. Electricity, food, fertilizer, oil and gas, diesel in the transportation industry, especially when you have to move product around a lot. The energy cost of just moving it and storing it is significant. And, there's been a dramatic increase. And that energy translates through everything. Every good we use.
Yeah, since we're starting to have that portion of the conversation, we've heard reports like from journalist Jerry Redfern from Capital in Maine about the state raking in more than $1.7 billion in oil and gas revenues in the first third of 2022. I wonder, is the state generally in a better economic position than the counties and cities because of those oil and gas revenues? Is that kind of maybe why we have the NMFA to help municipalities?
Well, NMFA, it was created in 1995, 1994. It was back in the early 90s. And so it wasn't, I don't know exactly what was it in reaction to. But yeah, the state's oil and gas tax revenue, one would expect, is doing extremely well.
Okay.
Whereas, again, in Santa Fe, where I studied a lot, their gross receipts tax has been also extremely strong. And one of the most interesting things was when municipal internet sales tax was actually collected and distributed to the municipalities. That was a significant pickup in GRT for the city of Santa Fe.
All right.
Almost immediately. And so, when you look at the municipalities, property tax, it's pretty stable. Even with the price, increases because of the various provisions, yield control, basically, the value of your property can only rise at 3% or less per year for tax purposes. That has really moderated property tax revenue. When you think about who collects property tax, that is the school districts, counties, municipalities. So that's pretty been a stable tax. So there's not big changes in it on a year-to-year basis, even with the incredible increases in house values we've seen.
Okay, I'd like to touch on some of the big news that we've been hearing this morning through the news broadcast from Morning Edition from NPR, and that's about recession. The National Bureau of Economic Research defines a recession as, they call it, a significant decline in economic activity that's spread across the economy and lasts more than a few months. given that, are we anywhere near that right now? And, you know, what would recession look like for us?
Well, the technical measure everybody other than the National Economic Bureau uses is two quarters of negative GDP, two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. And that's what we got this morning. First quarter final reading was a negative 1.6%. It started off at negative 1.4%, and with each revision, it got worse. And so when we look at this morning's announcement of negative 0.9% GDP growth, then you're saying, okay, pretty much everybody in the market has accepted that is a recession. Employment hasn't really changed too much, and that's a critical part of it. And, you know, a lot of people that are saying, oh, this really isn't a recession, are pointing to the strength of the labor market. You know, you can't be creating, you know, almost 400,000 jobs a month and be in a recession. But this is kind of a weird time because you're coming out of a massive policy-driven contraction driven by the pandemic. And the labor market is figuring itself out. And so, there's going to be a lot of jobs because we're still coming back from the pandemic in a lot of ways. So we'll see how this works out. As it means for New Mexico, and again, speaking from Santa Fe's economic perspective, New Mexico is slow to go in to a national recession, and it is slow to come out. So while the rest of the economies are contracting more quickly, New Mexico will be more stable.
Why is that?
It will decline.
Why are we a little behind and, at the beginning and the end of downturns?
That I really don't know. I mean, one is, you know, probably our economic mix. We are commodity and resource-based in a lot of ways, from agriculture, oil and gas. And then there's like Santa Fe, which is far more susceptible to tourism. You know, that is a big driver of their economy.
Okay, I just got the signal from another guest who'd like to jump in here and help with this one. I'd like to introduce a second guest. We have Kelly O'Donnell on the line with us. Kelly was a policy researcher with UNM for several years and previously held several high-ranking positions with the state during the Richardson administration. Now she's an independent economist with her own firm, O'Donnell Economics and Strategy. Thanks for coming on the show this morning, Kelly.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I wanted to add a little bit about my credentials. Right now, I'm currently the director of Home Wisdom for HomeWise, which is a housing nonprofit in Santa Fe. So, just wanted to add that.
Yeah, HomeWise has come on our show several times before. It's good to have another rep from HomeWise. But today we're talking economy. Why is it that New Mexico is a little behind the rest of the nation when it comes to decline and then bouncing back from recessions?
Well, there are two primary reasons New Mexico tends to lag the rest of the nation, both in going in and coming out. Well, three primary reasons that New Mexico tends to lag the nation, both in going in and coming out of recessions. The number one reason is government. We have a very high presence of federal government as well as state and local government in New Mexico. Those are some of our major employers. And as a result, and they tend to be a little bit more stable than the private sector when it comes to recession. Number two, we have a very large fossil fuel extractive sector, and that is not that is often countercyclical in the sense that it doesn't necessarily follow the overall economy, although there certainly are there are correlations. And the third reason, perhaps the biggest reason, is we're at the bottom often in terms of the economy, so we don't have far to fall and we don't have far to bounce up, and that's the sad reality of a state that is so highly reliant on the fossil fuel sector as a driver of jobs.
Okay, with that, let's pause for just a moment. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're taking your calls about the economy and the latest news of inflation and interest rate hikes. Call us at 505-277-5866. We'll be right back.
The Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm is committed to supporting KUNM where the firm's criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions. RothsteinLaw.com.
Listeners appreciate how nonprofit organizations are helping the community. Nonprofit underwriting at KUNM highlights your work while supporting KUNM programming. To become a nonprofit underwriter, call Aaron Steele at 505-277-2163.
If you're able to catch what mandolin player Avi Avital is doing with his right hand, you might notice that he holds his pick in an unusual way. Some might even say he holds his pick wrong. We'll find out how Avi Avital picked up that strange technique and why he's just fine with it to this day on the next Performance Today from 8 p.m.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Good morning. Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're talking to Brad Flitch from the New Mexico Finance Authority, and we also have Kelly O'Donnell from Home Wisdom, an offshoot of HomeWise, on the phone with us. We're talking about the economy. Tell us what your top economic concerns are. Is it employment or inflation? Call 505-277-5866 or tweet to us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. I want to jump back to Brad for a second. We've seen financial fortunes of state coffers rise and fall with the price of oil. I'm wondering, when times are good economically, generally, were New Mexico governments planning for a future economic crash?
Well, I know that I can't speak for them, but again, with the city, one of the things that Mayor Weber initially started, and he had a fiscal task force, and it was really, you know, looking at the reserves, what is the right amount of reserves, a city of Santa Fe's size and economic makeup should have. And, you know, and I think that the 2015 and coming out of, because the state of New Mexico was really slow coming out of the 2008 recession. And in fact, it took the city of Santa Fe 7 years to get back to the same level of GRT as it was in 2008. Now, when you look at the pandemic, In both instances, GRT fell about 15%. It took 2 years in the 2008. It took a couple months in the pandemic. But in the pandemic, it came back in within 6 months.
Okay, and I just want listeners to know.
In 2008.
Yeah, you just mentioned GRT. That's gross receipts tax. You know, we kind of think of it as sales tax, more or less. Go ahead.
And so that really so reserves and that's a really important factor on what municipalities. So I would say probably after the 2008 recession and things were looking good, people were municipal governments, county governments, local governments were school districts were hey you know, what if something happens? And they really look at their resiliency.
All right,
financially.
Let's jump to Kelly on this. I'm wondering if you have kind of a view of other governments beyond Santa Fe. When times are good, are they thinking about what's going to happen next? And are they planning for downturns in the future?
Well, I mean, I think we need to sort of contextualize what we're talking about good. Obviously, times are kind of good right now in terms of oil and gas revenue, which is a major driver of our state coffers and to a lesser extent local government coffers. Times are very good. Now, what that means is that we have a huge influx of what's called one-time money. That means money we assume we're not going to get next year or the year after. And that's almost entirely money from oil and gas, both the royalties that are generated by the federal and state governments, as well as the many different taxes we impose on oil and gas. As a result, the state of New Mexico has an unprecedented surplus. And we have these times. A state that's dependent on the oil and gas sector or any fossil fuel extractive sector is going to rise and fall with the fortunes of a commodity whose price is determined in international markets. We don't have any control over that. For that reason, when we get these windfalls, it's absolutely incumbent upon the state to invest in things that will enable us to withstand the inevitable decline in revenue that comes with, again, dependence on oil and gas. So what's really absolutely critical at this point is two things. Number one, we've got to bank some of this money in a way that enables us to fund state priorities in the future. So I'm talking expendable trust funds. And the other thing is we need to continue to stabilize our state revenues in the face of oil and gas. We've made a lot of progress there already in terms of creating mechanisms that stabilize our revenue flows over time. And the state has been proactive on that. Where we've been less proactive is on actually decreasing our dependence on oil and gas revenue as a driver of state spending and using our non-recurring oil and gas revenue to diversify the economy. And so what we really need to be doing is taking this one-time infusion of cash, banking it for that inevitable future when we're going to need it, and banking it in ways that really are targeted towards the highest priorities and fundamental needs of New Mexicans. And really what that comes down to, education, healthcare, public safety, housing. And of course, housing is a major issue right now. So when I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about setting up bank accounts that have specific needs of the state in mind and putting the money there and utilizing it over time as oil and gas inevitably decline.
Okay,
and I think there's one other. I'd like to add one other thing, and you know that is that we are seeing projections right now that the oil and gas sector is going to stay strong for the next 5 to 7 years. That's sort of the official line. However, as catastrophic fires have demonstrated, we are in the throes of climate change, and as people become more and more cognizant of that fact, I think the role of oil and gas in driving what is an existential crisis is going to become more apparent, and there is going to be a quicker movement away from fossil fuels. At that point, we really can't say what's going to happen with the oil and gas sector. So I think we need to be planning for a future where we have less money, and we should not assume that future is 5 to 7 years away. We should be being very proactive.
And maybe I can ask Brad about this, since you're at NMFA and you're investing in infrastructure around the state. I know you haven't been there long, but is there a lot of investment that you're aware of in renewable energy sources, or you know, some kind of other diversification, some way to plan for that downturn in oil and gas when and you know it happens?
Well, I know that at the city that about 18 months ago, we did an $18 million energy efficiency lease through the Energy and Minerals Department, and their guaranteed energy savings program. And so I know that locally, the city of Santa Fe is investing in solar panels for the water. Pumping water out of the Rio Grande up 1,000 feet takes a lot of electricity, and they've made a significant investment in solar panels, significant investment in LED streetlights, not only improve the quality of light, but also save quite a bit of money on electricity. So I understand that, you know, that locally there are initiatives throughout the state to do that. I couldn't tell you if the New Mexico Finance Authority has with their energy efficiency. I know they have a program. I couldn't tell you the details of it.
Okay. Let's get some listeners.
I wanted to mention, though, about the investment and banking this cash. And this is the insidious nature of inflation. As much as we want to bank that cash, when you look at what the state code allows local and state government to invest in, you know, in the markets versus inflation. You know, when you look at a 3-year treasury for the first part of this, there was almost 700 or 7% difference between how much inflation was eroding your purchasing power versus the 1% you were earning on your investments for a net loss of purchasing power of 6%. And, that is one of the biggest problems facing New Mexico. We need to bank the cash. I agree with that. Build our reserves. But we got to find a way to, hopefully get inflation down, because that's eating our reserves faster than we're earning any money on it. And so that's kind of a critical concept. And how do you get around that? It's really difficult. But, investing in productive real assets like solar panels and clean energy and, systems that improve efficiency or do things like, capital investments. That might be a better way to utilize that money, because if the Fed doesn't get inflation back down to something reasonable, in the short period of time, next year or two, those reserves are really going to hurt.
Okay, I want to go to Kelly. I actually have a couple different questions for you. First, we hit on a few different things there, but one is socking some money away and finding a way to make it grow. It seems like the state may have figured that out. We have the land grant permanent funds. We have, the state workers retirement account, PARA, I believe it's called. Could we do something similar with this oil and gas money, kind of create some sort of recurring interest funding or something like that?
Well, the reality, of course, is that the land grant permanent fund is oil and gas revenue,
right,
as is the severance tax permanent fund, as is the early childhood trust fund. All of these, all of our endowment funds are supported almost entirely by oil and gas revenue in one form or another. So, yes, the state of New Mexico has a very long history of banking oil and gas money in the expectation. And in the reality, let's step back a second. The land grant permanent fund was set up by Congress, essentially when New Mexico entered the Union, in order that we would be able to fund public education and education in New Mexico. That was the intention of the fund, and that's why it's sitting there growing. And so New Mexico has a great long history of investing oil and gas funds and investing them fairly well, because those permanent funds have definitely grown. I'd also add that I, for one, am not concerned about the state of New Mexico's reserves at this point. With $1 billion-plus budget surplus, the reserves aren't the problem. The problem is, how do we spend this money in a fiscally responsible manner that doesn't set us up for a huge crash when inevitably the bottom comes out of oil and gas? That's the question we need to be answering right now.
Okay. Let's touch on the other thing that we hit on just a moment ago, and that's diversifying the state's economy. We've been very reliant on oil and gas, as you just described, but also federal spending in the state. How do you see diversification coming? I mean, we have the booming film industry and we have the burgeoning cannabis industry. Are those things we can count on?
And those are both, those are both components of our economy, and no, neither of those things are panaceas. They are nice to have, frankly. I mean, they create jobs. They're good for the economy. I'm not going to knock it. But where we really need to be investing in our money, if we want a diverse economy and we want to grow existing business and attract new business and staunch the flow of working age young professionals out of the state, if we want to do those things, we really need to focus on those core functions of the state that make quality of life good, make people want to live here. And by that, I'm talking public education, Medicaid and health care, those bottom line investments that people need and businesses need in order to thrive. And we need to set up some mechanisms whereby we take some of this one-time money and ensure that it's available, again, for those real needs that make New Mexico a good place to live 10, 20, 30 years in the future.
Okay, Brad, in an article in Capital Maine a couple weeks ago from Jerry Redfern, he highlighted that the state doesn't like to use oil and gas revenues for anything that will require recurring funding, like payrolls. They don't want to hire new people with this one-time money. Does NMFA have a role in getting oil and gas money out to people or businesses in need, and is it always funding for building and infrastructure?
The primary mission, or the primary program at NMFA, is the public project revolving loan fund, and it is driven by government gross receipts tax, and which is different than gross receipts tax for the private sector. This revenue is derived from local governments providing taxable services to its residents: water, sewer, garbage pickup, and other taxable type of activities, parking, recreation facilities. And so that is the primary, and NMFA is to receive 75% of government gross receipts tax. And that's been a very stable, growing revenue source for NMFA. And its use is primarily to pay debt service on the bonds issued, as well as make new loans to local governments and, our clients. And so we don't really see any variation in our revenue source from the state, which is gross receipts, government gross receipts tax. So, no, we're not there to get oil money out to anybody. That's other parts of the state.
Okay, Kelly, did you have something to add there?
Sure, yeah. Oil and gas revenue in New Mexico is used, and I need to make a distinction. A fair amount of our oil and gas revenue is not considered non-recurring. It's considered recurring money. So I'm talking about the excess that we're generating as a result of this boom in the Permian. So when I'm talking about one-time money, and New Mexico historically uses oil and gas revenue for capital projects. So we bond against it and we produce capital projects. In addition, the money that's deposited in the land grant permanent fund is invested by the State Investment Council. And they, invest in a broad array of securities and do some investing here in New Mexico as well. So oil and gas revenue is a source of a really important source for capital improvements. And that's good, because those capital investments are one way of utilizing that money in a way that will generate long-term benefits for the state economy.
Okay. And, of course, the irony is that we have all this money in the bank, and the place where New Mexico is consistently struggling to keep up in the region is with personnel, with payrolls, with hiring, with being able to pay people a decent wage compared to Texas or Colorado or Arizona. I don't really have a question there. But Kelly, do you have something to say?
Well, yeah, I think that we really do have a workforce crisis in New Mexico. There's no question about that. And it's a sort of a self-perpetuating problem, in the sense that we have a workforce problem, which makes it difficult to recruit and retain employers, which causes our, recent graduates of UNM and New Mexico State and our other many universities to leave the state in order to get jobs. And so that problem becomes self-perpetuating. Again, the reality is, if we invest in those baseline critical services like public education and childcare and housing, we will create an economy that people want to take part in, and that is more attractive to our best and brightest, and they won't leave. The other really significant issue, I think, that's facing workforce in New Mexico is lack of housing. You see that, down in the Permian for sure, but you also see that in Albuquerque and Santa Fe. There is very limited affordable housing. And I'm not just talking about rentals and subsidized rentals. I'm talking about opportunities, starter homes, the ability for a young family to buy a home near where they work. That should be pretty straightforward. But here in New Mexico, you find, and Santa Fe is a great example, we have people working in Santa Fe. Roughly a third of the people who work in Santa Fe live outside of Santa Fe County and commute into Santa Fe. That's a massive expense. We're talking thousands of dollars a year spent on commuting that could be spent on other things, in addition putting a ton of carbon into the atmosphere and creating, helping to perpetuate our climate problem. So one of the major solutions to both our workforce problem and our broader economic problem is to increase the supply of affordable housing, and not just for the poor people who are very poor, but also for regular working New Mexicans who just want a place to live and a yard that their kids can play in.
Okay, we are going to shift on topics, and I have another guest to introduce, but first we have to pause for just a moment. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
KUNM is your trusted source of award-winning local news, information, and entertainment. Thanks to all the generous donors who make this programming possible. KUNM, powered by you.
Listeners appreciate how nonprofit organizations are helping the community. Nonprofit underwriting at KUNM highlights your work while supporting KUNM programming. To become a nonprofit underwriter, call Aaron Steele at 505-277-2163.
When Miguel Trujillo came back from serving in the Marine Corps during World War II, he couldn't vote. The veteran turned civil rights activist from Isleta Pueblo then challenged the state of New Mexico with a lawsuit and won. We're talking about the legacy of Miguel Trujillo and the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We are taking your calls on the economy and personal finance. How has inflation been affecting your family? Have you had to make adjustments to spending on groceries or other necessary expenses? Tell us by calling 505-277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org, or you can tweet us also, use hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is a great time to introduce our third guest this hour. We have Amber Wallen from New Mexico Voices for Children joining us by phone. NM Voices is a policy advocacy group that pushes for systematic change to improve the lives of disadvantaged children and families. Thanks for being with us this morning, Amber.
Great to be here. Thanks.
I have a question here that I probably should maybe start with Kelly and then come back to you for a reaction. We've had a lot of reporting on the latest inflation figures, 9.1% year over year. I think I've heard there's been a 12% increase in the cost of groceries. We feel it when we buy almost anything or fill our gas tanks. How much control do governments have over inflation? Are we doomed to being reactive and having to fight inflation after it's already hitting us?
Well, the state government doesn't have any control over inflation. Obviously, inflation is to the extent that there is control over inflation, that control is held within the federal government, obviously, and they try to control inflation with interest rates. But that's a very delicate balancing act, as anybody who is attempting to buy a house right now would know. There's this interplay between inflation and interest rates, and getting to the right balance is difficult and fraught with peril, I'd say. But there's nothing the state or local governments can do about inflation per se.
Okay, Amber. We are talking about how inflation might be affecting New Mexican families. Can you say more about how rising prices are affecting the people NM Voices works with?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, what we're seeing right now is that families are really feeling the impacts of inflation. And that really impacts folks differently depending on their economic situation, I'd say. And so what inflation might mean for many middle-income families in our state is that every little bit extra that they might have otherwise been saving for retirement or for a rainy day or using for vacations or college saving funds, special things for their kids, that really gets gobbled up by inflation. For low-income families who are maybe already struggling to afford things like food, or Kelly mentioned housing, you know, really basic necessities, that they may no longer be able to afford those things because they simply cost so much. And that's really problematic in New Mexico, because even pre-pandemic, we had some of the worst rates in the nation in things like childhood food insecurity. And so in these cases, this type of struggle for so many of our families, where we have, you know, the most recent data shows that about 43% of our families in the state are having difficulty paying basic household expenses. We have at least a fifth of our families who are not sure they can make their next rent or housing payments. All of these things are things that impact our entire state and will slow any sort of economic recovery that we really are still trying to make. And so many New Mexicans really have a lot of ground to make up from the pandemic.
Okay, well, we're still in this lingering pandemic economy even before we consider inflation and the rest. I'm wondering, Amber, what kinds of economic challenges have you had success in fighting over the last few years?
Well, one of the things I'd lift up or that I think is really important to bring into the conversation is that the state has made a lot of investments in recent years in working New Mexicans and New Mexicans with kids and families in our state. The state has done things that are really building economic opportunity for our families, things like improving tax credits for working families with children, things like this legislative session, they created a brand new state level child tax credit. Minimum wage has been increased. Importantly for this discussion, because we're talking about inflation, and you know, one of the things that impacts is lending, is that we've limited what we would call predatory lending, really high interest rates on folks. But you know, on that point, one of the things that we saw during the pandemic was that a lot of folks took on debt during the pandemic. We did some polling recently with partners that showed that about 26% of Hispanic New Mexicans either used all their savings or went into debt during the pandemic. And we know about half of New Mexico families use their federal child tax credits to help pay down debt. And so that's problematic because the child tax credit at the federal level is going away as interest rates are raising. Cost of carrying debt is even higher. So not only will we see poverty rates rise as a reflection of some of those federal actions, but other federal relief is slowing, cost of borrowing money, carrying debt is rising. And so we know families still need relief, and we're concerned about the economic situation that so many families in our state are still facing.
Now, something else expected to go away is that state subsidized child care, the help that families have been getting over the last year or so. I believe it's scheduled to run out of funding or just kind of end next summer. Is that right?
That is right. And this really ties into a lot of what Kelly was bringing up. You know, we've made some big investments in our families. And, you know, what we saw during the pandemic was that childcare is right at this intersection. If families don't have childcare, parents, especially mothers, can't work. Children don't have reliable places to go during the day. And in businesses can't have workers if parents can't work. And so you really have childcare is something that can challenge an entire economy in our state. And so these investments in childcare are just really crucial for how we get our economy on track. You know, New Mexico has some of the highest rates in the nation of working but still poor families. And so childcare is crucial. So we really love that expansion of childcare to nearly all New Mexico families, but it is only 1 year. And so the real question is, how do we fund that long term? How do we create economic opportunity long term? How do we invest in things like we would say childcare is infrastructure. And so how are we investing in those things? And so really, to Kelly's point, it's crucial that we're looking at how we're diversifying our revenue so we have money to spend, not just in times of economic boom, not just when we're in an oil and gas boom, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. You know, that's how we really build a better economy that can weather these better, that can weather downturns better, that is really, to Kelly's point, building a workforce that's really strong, where we're attracting companies, where companies know that New Mexico is the best state in the nation, and it's where companies should want to be.
Kelly, I'm wondering, how do economic downturns kind of impact different communities differently? And I'm thinking of those that are, you know, including those that are already struggling to keep up.
Well, obviously, economic downturns are particularly damaging to the most vulnerable families and the most vulnerable individuals. So, what you know, we obviously have to be very alert to the fact that the impacts are going to be much more severe on those people and families who are least able to weather those downturns. And, you know, that really speaks in often to a lack of assets on the part of families. And one of the ways that we can build the resiliency of low-income families in the face of economic downturns is helping them to acquire and maintain assets, you know, so that they have a safety net when the car breaks down, when the hours get cut. And one of the best ways to do that, of course, is to help people buy homes, because that is the primary way that Americans build, or middle-class Americans build assets. And it's something that a lot of people take for granted. But in fact, many, many residents of New Mexico, even though they might potentially be able to afford a home, can't find one because there just isn't the supply. So I think that the most vulnerable communities are the ones that are tend to be the hardest hit by economic downturns. But there are a lot of things that we as a state and also as local governments can do to build the resiliency of families through investing in them.
Okay, I just want to read off here. We got a tweet from Samantha Brochter, who says addressing climate change via mitigation or adaptation is not only an enormous and sustainable economic is an enormous and sustainable economic opportunity for the state. I believe, Kelly, you kind of said the same thing. We had a caller, but they just dropped off. We'll come back to that in a moment. Amber, let's talk about women in the workforce, especially women of color. They've suffered more from the pandemic than any other population. Are there safety nets in place now that we didn't have a few years ago when the pandemic hit that may help in this recession?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you bring up such an it's so on point to say that, because we know that women really disproportionately were dropping out of the workforce as a result of home care and homeschooling kids during the height of the pandemic. We know that women's wages really suffered. And we know that those challenges were biggest for women of color, for Hispanic women, for Black, African American, and indigenous women in our communities. And so we know there was already a gap there. There was already a big wage gap when you talk about women and women of color, especially. And so we know that that exacerbated that. And so policies, especially in New Mexico, where we have a majority of people of color of state, 75% of our kids in New Mexico are children of color. So when we're investing in programs that benefit children of color and mothers and families of color, that's really going to benefit our entire state. And so policies like the child care expansion that you talked about, policies, New Mexico's really on the cutting edge of early childhood policy. And those are investments right in our state's future and our economy and our workforce. So we love to see that. We talked about the land grant permanent fund earlier. There's a ballot measure in November that's coming up that will use a tiny portion of a land grant permanent fund to provide a permanent source for early education funding. That'll be key. And then again, back to tax policy. You know, the investments that we've seen in child and family focused tax policy at the state level, those go a long way to really improving childhood outcomes, improving outcomes for mothers of color, and improving equity in our state. So I think those are really important steps that the state is taking to build economic resiliency for families. But, you know, the reason we're here today, because of inflation and because of those challenges families are facing, it really shows we need to keep doing that. We need to keep looking at housing. We need to keep making those education investments and early ed investments if we want to be able to continue progress for our kids and families in state.
Okay, we're talking about affordability for families, and we've mentioned inflation. We have to talk about the big news that came out today, actually yesterday. Let's pile onto those economic woes by adding higher interest rates to the discussion. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve Bank raised interest rates again, this time by 0.75%. I understand there's a flaw in the way I'm setting up this question, though. Brad, I want to go to you. The interest rate hike is there specifically to fight inflation, right? How does that work?
So it just raises the cost of capital. And just as a really easy example to go through is look at housing. And mortgage rates have went from below 3% to over 6% in the last, 6 months, 8 months. And those hiking rates and then mortgage applications dropped 20% year over year was the most recent reading. And so what's happened is demand for new homes has plummeted, and the price of lumber in the commodity market has also plummeted. in the past 3 months because of the drop in demand. And so hiking rates, and this is a crude and primitive tool the Fed has, is to try to destroy demand for products. And by raising rates, they've really substantially destroyed the demand for new housing or new houses, given the mortgage applications and some of the other real estate transaction data. And so in that case, the desired effect is to lower the cost of housing or, you know, the inputs, lumber, copper, sheetrock, you know, some of the concrete. So in that sense, raising interest rates has brought those housing commodity prices down substantially. So that's really the whole point in hiking rates, is to destroy demand for product. And unfortunately, they can only really destroy demand for interest-sensitive products.
Okay, Kelly, I'm wondering, will the new higher interest rates, you know, is that going to have the effect of maybe sacrificing some people for the sake of macroeconomic health?
Oh, I wouldn't frame it that way. Obviously, higher interest rates are the way the Fed combats inflation. I would very much differ with the statement, however, that housing prices are coming down, because they're not. There's every indication that housing prices are, in fact, holding steady in the face of increasing interest rates, which is a little alarming to folks, because obviously interest rates do drive demand for housing, because they make, when they're down, they make mortgages cheaper. But now that they're up, housing prices are not coming down. So that really speaks to the lack of supply. Housing markets, prices in housing markets are driven by a lot of things, but the major one, as in most markets, is supply. So if you don't have enough homes, the competition for those homes is going to drive the price up, even if the price of purchasing a home, i.e. the mortgage interest rate, is going up. So the fact that housing prices aren't falling in the face of higher interest rates is a real indication that we are in a profound housing supply crunch. And there are lots of historical reasons why we're here. But what we need to do now is combat that supply crunch. Fortunately, at least here in New Mexico, we have a great deal of non-recurring revenue that we need to invest in commodities that will benefit New Mexicans and make New Mexico a more desirable place to live. Housing is one of those things. So, I mean, I think that there's an interesting philosophical conversation to have about interest rates and inflation. But when we're talking about the quality of life here in the state, we really need to be thinking about not wondering what's going on with Fed, but going ahead and investing in those things that are going to make people's lives better.
Okay, Amber, let's get into that philosophical conversation. Does it make sense to make money harder to get via higher interest rates when families are already struggling, so we can get back into balance economically?
Yeah, that's the main question happening right now, you know, because what we know is that while there's been some recovery, our families are not fully recovered. And what we saw with the COVID recession, unlike a typical recession, they call it a K-shaped recession because higher income folks weathered pretty well. They're back above where they were pre-recession. But our low income families have not recovered to where they were pre-COVID. And so anything that's causing lower and lower middle income, regular working New Mexicans and regular workers all across the country, anything that's causing challenges right now, we're really concerned about. And so we think that it's still important that we're really focused on those folks who still need that bit of an economic boost, who need a bit of economic opportunity, investing in safety net programs, investing in things like wages, tax credits that help families.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off. We've reached the end of the hour. The theme music is taking over. Thanks to everyone who called in or tweeted to us. And a big thank you to our guests, Brad Flitch, Kelly O'Donnell, and Amber Wallen. If you missed part of the show, we'll have audio up on our website soon. You can also subscribe to the Let's Talk New Mexico podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Jeanette DeDios handled the phones today. Robert Maldonado live tweeted, and Megan Kamrick produced the show. I'm Kaveh Movahed for Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week.